Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
Happy Tuesday. Welcome to Social Distance Central, the show with the COVID name that's not about COVID. During the COVID era, I'm Bick Nizar. With me, the voice of the Canucks on Sportsnet 650, it's Brendan Batchelor. Batch, what's going on, man?
Not a whole lot. How are you today?
Oh, man, just taking in this overcast that's set in across the lower mainland. We had such a nice day yesterday, and we get this today.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be the theme of the next few weeks is, you know, this time of the year, it feels like the weather in Vancouver can never decide what it wants to do. So one day it'll feel like summer, the next day it might feel like November, and we'll probably have that for the next few weeks until we get into real summer into the month of July.
For sure. Okay, so a lot going on today. We got the bunch of submissions yesterday for Game of Takes. Keep those coming. You can jump online at Sportsnet 650, and we got a post there, or you can go to Batch and I's Twitter. And if you want to try to enter in for Game of Takes for this Thursday and take on Chris Keene, you can do so by commenting just your idea about the future of goaltending for the Vancouver Canucks. And also, it seems like that conversation has morphed a bit, Batch, just seeing all the people that have replied so far, that it's evolved and changed, and you can go any which way about it you want, but we are going to pick two people on Wednesday, so your chance to still get in is open.
Yeah, it's certainly less of a black and black and white issue, I guess, in terms of one side of the argument or the other, as opposed to what we had with Jim Benning last week,
where
very much Jim Benning is great or Jim Benning is awful, and there wasn't a lot of middle ground. There's a lot of nuance to this conversation.
Totally.
So, you know, when we discuss, you know, should they sign Jacob Markstrom, we see a lot of people replying saying, well, you know, if it's a long-term deal, then maybe not, because Thatcher Demko is here and you're going to have to part ways with one of them before the expansion draft. But if he would sign a shorter term deal, then I would do it. So it's, you know, not a situation where you're picking one side or the other as much as we saw last week. But that said, we do still want to hear your opinions, and we will still see two people go head to head with their takes on the goaltending situation in Game of Takes.
It's all the whole point of this is develop the take and come out strong with the take. And, you know, just because you reply once to it doesn't mean you have to fit your entire take in 280 characters. If you need a bit more, do so. Just that's how you enter the competition. So make sure you reply to those tweets and or send us a text 650-650 with your take, and we'll find a way, hopefully select you tomorrow. The other thing we're doing today is our mailbag continues with our player mailbags today. Former Canuck Derek Dorsett will join us in about a half hour's time. So you got questions for Derek, 650-650, send them to us or tweet us at Batch Hockey, at Bick650, B-I-K, and we will relay those to Derek, which should be pretty exciting as well, because, you know, he's a pretty thoughtful guy, and you know, with some reflection of his career, now going, 2.5, 3 years? You know, he's always got interesting things to say.
Yeah, so looking forward to catching up with Derek Dorsett. And again, make sure you get your questions in. We will relay some of them to him during our Tuesday mailbag. But I want to find out what's keeping him busy, his thoughts about involvement in hockey, his thoughts on the Vancouver Canucks, and maybe how they set up in this playoff format. And anything else that you can think of that you want to ask Derek Dorsett, we will talk about it with him in about half an hour.
I always forget, I mean, not always forget, but when we had Sedin week, the tributes that they pay towards him near the end of his career and also the end of their season really flushed back to my memory during Sedin week. And you know, we had him on the station, I think like right before puck drop. And, you know, he was emotional that he couldn't be there because he was dealing with a green card or a visa issue. And it just he just couldn't get over to be a part of that whole night and that whole week. And it's so funny too, because he was here a handful of years, but at the back end of their careers, and you just see what an impact those guys had on a player like that.
Yeah, and you know, taking it as far as to giving him the puck from their final game, mm-hmm. which you know, I know would have meant a lot to him. And it, again, we talked about this at length during Sedin week, that it shows the character of those two guys in Daniel and Henrik. But you know, that was one of the questions that we've received so far in terms of the Tuesday mailbag, is what has he done with that puck? So we'll put that question to him and find out whether he has it at his home or what he's done with it. But you know, yeah, he was a guy that, you know, as much as his tenure in Vancouver wasn't a long one, it does feel like when you talk to his teammates, it was a meaningful one. The guys respected him a lot, that he was seen as a good team guy. And, you know, when you see how the Sedins paid tribute to him during their final week, it really underscores that.
And he brings part of that accountability, I think, that you need in rooms. And when we talk about culture, I think it gets framed as it's an easy word to use, is just culture of a room. But really, to me, that word, it speaks in accountability. Are there guys who are able to keep other players accountable as far as their work ethic and their individual traits? Are they trying to get improvement out of their seasons and out of their own development? And, you know, he strikes me as a guy who keeps people accountable, and he always gets talked about as, you know, one of the important leaders of a team. And when we're going through this era right now, not that I'm necessarily going to get into it with Derek, but as far as looking at leadership, I think that's one of the things I do want to ask him, talk to him about, just within the locker room, you know, how do you look at leaders and who emerges and how quickly do people emerge? So that's one of the things I'd be interested in getting his thoughts on. That's all coming up at 12:35. When he joins the show, you still have plenty of time to get your text in, 650-650. One of the things we did want to talk about, I put it up on Twitter. You came up with this batch. I thought it was great, and it really puts people into a bind of what they want to think about coming forward with this playoff series or play-in series that the Canucks are going to be playing against the Minnesota Wild, we hope, should games come back. There's an opportunity, like, you'll know the lottery odds going into the play-in series.
I was going to say, which is unprecedented, right?
Yes.
You know, as a team that is participating in, you know, I guess we can't really call them the playoffs because they're mm-hmm. not the last 16, but a play-in round, you will know the chance the Canucks have of picking in the top three prior to the start of that series. Now, there is a very strong chance that will be zero, that the first stage of this draft lottery they're going to do is going to yield that, you know, all three of the top three picks are from the bottom seven teams that aren't taking part in the playoffs, and therefore you'll know, okay, the Canucks won't have a chance at a lottery pick. But there is a scenario whereby they would have a 12.5% chance at a lottery pick, and that would be in a scenario where one of the top three picks falls to one of the teams, the placeholder teams, I guess you would call it, in terms of how they're building that lottery format, that then would be contested by the teams that lose those playoff rounds. If two of those lottery picks fall into that situation, it would be 25%, and if all three of them fall into that situation, it would be 37.5%. Which is a pretty good percentage chance, pretty good odds of, you know, securing a top three pick in the draft for a team that will still be playing. So, you know, this poll question that we drew up and we've got on your Twitter right now at Bic650, I've retweeted it as well at Batch Hockey if you want to go and make your voice heard there. The concept of this is not, you know, will the Canucks try harder or not as hard because they know there's a lottery chance. That's not going to happen. Players play, coaches coach. They don't care about draft picks. We've talked about that lots in the past. But what we want to try and get an answer to is how you would feel as a fan, because, you know, we've talked about this in the past, whether it's, you know, quote unquote team tank or whatever, people that feel that the Canucks should be trying to push for a high draft pick. Well, now not only can you say they should be trying to push for a high draft pick, but they have a really good chance of getting one if they lose to the Minnesota Wild. So the poll question that we put out is, what would make you cheer against the Canucks in their series with Minnesota? What percentage chance would make you say, you know what, as much as I want the Canucks to win, a top three pick is more important? And we've got four options for you. The first one is 12.5%. Like I talked about, that's one of the three lottery picks falling to the eight placeholder teams. 25%, that's two of the lottery picks. 37.5%, that's three of the lottery picks, all three of them. And the fourth option, which is winning the poll right now, is nothing. I will not cheer against the Vancouver Canucks, which is what I expected. And, you know, certainly I'm encouraged to see that fans are planning to, at least the majority of fans are planning to cheer for the Canucks. And, you know, without any worry about draft picks, say, hey, they've got a chance to win a series, to advance to the official Stanley Cup playoffs. We want to see them win. Draft picks don't matter. But that said, 35.8% of people that have responded to the poll say they would cheer, or 35.8% of people responded to the poll say they would cheer against the Canucks if they had that 37.5% chance of picking in the top three.
It's kind of nefarious the way we put this of of what would make you cheer against the Canucks. Cause you know, I do think people will still cheer for them, but is there a certain threshold where you consider, hey, a loss isn't so bad. Like that's the nice way to put it. But you know, we are fairly nefarious here. So
yeah,
again,
well, again, I love this lottery setup, and I said it at the time because I love chaos. And if that scenario happens where, you know, almost you have an almost 38% chance of a top three pick if you lose that first round, there will be people in this market who will be actively campaigning for the Canucks to lose, whether it be on social media. We know that's a fact. We've seen that in the past in terms of wanting them to tank late in the season. You know, we've seen it around the NHL where, you know, a number of years ago, Buffalo Sabres fans were cheering when their team was scored against because they wanted to get to that point where they had a high pick. Now, certainly that won't be possible because fans aren't going to be in the stands, but that's sort of what we were interested to gauge with this poll question is, you know, as much as the Canucks have taken a step in the right direction, they've had a very good year. They were in the conversation to be a playoff team before the season was paused. How much of the electorate, I guess you could call them in this poll question, the Canuck fan base out there is still of the mindset of obtain picks, plan for the future?
But right now, 5% says 12.5% a lottery pick chance they'd love, a 4.8% for a 25% chance of the lottery. So those are your true team tankists, right? The 37% is really, I thought they were just going to come down to those two. There's nothing that you can cheer against or the 37% chance. Because at least with the 37% chance, you look at it and you say, like, we're in the top, right? It's not that it's likely, but it gives you the highest threshold, right? And you're okay with the idea of at least the reward can be so large.
And I understand the mindset of people that are voting in that 37% category or even the 25% category, because the thought process there is, well, they're basically getting playoff experience by playing in this five-game series with Minnesota. And they're unlikely to win the next series after that because they're going to face, you know, someone like Colorado or St. Louis or Vegas. And those are teams that objectively would be favored to beat the Canucks in a playoff series. So if you look at it within that bubble and you say, what would I prefer, a first round exit or a pretty good chance at a top three pick? When your team is already going to have something that resembles playoff experience anyway, like I can get inside the mind of someone that wants to vote that way. I'm not that strong about it where I would say, you know, I would actively be hoping that the Canucks would lose or to say that, you know, you would really look at it as a great silver lining if the Canucks lose. I think for these young players to experience winning a series, advancing and, you know, testing their mettle against one of the top teams in the league is important in the long term. And, you know, not to say that it's more important than getting high picks, but you're not even guaranteed one of those picks anyway. Even in the best case scenario, you're still at, you know, around 38%. So, you know, that's my approach on it. I'm interested in what you think, Vic, though, because again, I could get myself into the mind of people that would say we're going to lose in the first round anyway. So why not give ourselves a chance at a top three pick?
Silver and Black cannot reply to this thread. Just be like, I'd have to get a guarantee that we could draft Lafreniere before I would even commit to the idea of, you know, I guess cheering for tanking. And this is the thing that we've talked about so much. And I, if I could vote, it's my own poll. I can't vote on it. Like, nothing is the answer here, because you create the culture of, there I am using that culture word again, of losing. And it's something Jim Benning has talked about, being in that black hole, right? But when you talk about that Buffalo Sabres fans who are cheering, right? Yeah, they tanked, and it did work. But when you accept losing, the issues are far greater than just what you the immediate reward.
And those issues are something the Buffalo Sabres are still experiencing to this day.
Exactly, right? And for me, coming into the season, like, nothing has changed, pandemic or no pandemic, chaotic draft or non-chaotic draft. The issue here is you get a finite number of years of Elias Pettersson. And the important thing here, I guess now Quinn Hughes, the important thing here is the confirmation of Elias Pettersson being a certain level of player, star, superstar, whatever it is. So we've confirmed that. Quinn Hughes, his season has basically confirmed that. You only have 11, maybe 12 honest cracks at it with these guys as your leaders of this. You want more guys coming behind them, and that's why the draft is important. Don't get me wrong, but these two guys are going to be the face of your franchise for the next decade. So to willingly root against the idea of giving them as many opportunities to try to accomplish the ultimate goal goes against everything that we talk about when it comes to sports and wanting to compete. Those guys themselves want to compete and try to achieve the ultimate glory that would be for the players, the organization, and the fan base alike. So to limit those opportunities limits your chances to try to get to that victory. And that's where I kind of fall off on the team tank debate in general, and just tanking in general, because when you've got a certain level of player, your best practice is to keep pushing, give them as many resources as possible to try to maximize winning.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, that said, you know, I don't think either of us would say that the Canucks are a legitimate Stanley Cup contender this year, or they're not viewed that way anyway. Now, with this pause and all teams being on level footing and, you know, us really not knowing what to expect from this playoff format, is there a chance that a team that we don't expect to contend goes on to win the Stanley Cup? Absolutely there is. And so, you know, from that part of it, that's where that mindset should come in, that the Canucks do have a chance to move to the playoffs. And when you have a chance to move to the playoffs, you have a chance to win the Stanley Cup. And you should give yourself that opportunity. And you know what? You talk about like 11, 12 chances. Like, I think it's more conservative than that.
Sure. Yeah. Like, I'm being very loose on it.
Like, if you look at, you know, Daniel and Henrik Sedin's time with the Canucks, they made the playoffs numerous seasons, but how many years did they really have legit shots to go very deep in the Stanley Cup playoffs? I would argue two. Maybe you could argue three or four, but to me, the years that stand out from the entire time that Daniel and Henrik Sedin were members of the Vancouver Canucks are obviously the 2011 year where they went all the way to the Stanley Cup final in Game 7, and then the year where the Canucks blew the lead against the Minnesota Wild in the second round and would have had a chance almost certainly to, well, they would have been in the conference finals and they would have been favored to go on to the Stanley Cup final that season. But in terms of, you know, legitimate chances where you can say, okay, this is a team that could get it done, barring a crazy year where no one expects a team to go deep and they do it, which does happen occasionally, but is the exception rather than the rule. like you could probably, looking forward to this group, and again, they're a great young core group. I think they're going to build themselves into a contender and be a great team. But that said, how big could their window be? Like, I think you could probably, if we look back on this in 20 years, when we're looking at Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes nearing the ends of their careers or having already retired, to me, it's more likely that the number of chances that this team had to legitimately contend for a Stanley Cup are on one hand than it is, you know, a dozen or or 10 times. So, you know, that's part of this as well, that again, you go back to that winning culture. And, you know, I agree with you that in terms of making the playoffs, 10 to 12 chances in these guys' careers is probably accurate. And once you're in the playoffs, you never know what could happen. But the more important thing here is building a winning culture so that when they get those select few real windows that open for them where you can say, okay, this could be the team that could win a Stanley Cup, they are prepared mentally and prepared from the experiences they've had to take advantage of those opportunities. And the only way you put yourself in that spot is by experiencing winning before. This is not a team, you know, again, barring an absolutely out of this world run that comes out of nowhere, this is not a team that is going to go from a bubble club 1 year to winning the Stanley Cup next year. It's a gradual growth. It's a gradual process. And part of that is finding a way to win in playoff series. And part of that is learning from losing playoff series. And so would it be the worst thing in the world for the Canucks this year to, let's say, beat the Minnesota Wild and then go up against one of those other top-end teams and lose in short order or get swept or find a way to win a couple games but ultimately go out to someone like St. Louis or Vegas? I don't think that's the worst thing at all. I think that would be an important learning experience for this group going forward that they would then be able to draw upon and use and build themselves into a contending team down the road.
This format actually kind of plays to what I think their strength is too, because coming into the season, I had my questions if they would make the playoffs. I had my own projections, but I thought it was a lot shakier of trying to get into the playoffs than it's kind of turned out to be. And they've hovered around the bubble, obviously, near the end of the season, but that's kind of what you expected. But once they were in, like with the phrases I thought I've said in the summer, it's they're more built for the playoffs than they are built to get into the playoffs. So the way I do look at it is like, yeah, if you provide yourself the opportunity and the chance to get in, the chance to try to win, well, then that's how you start to win, right? And to give yourself and give your best players and set that tone of this is what we try to do. You know, we look at the Washington Capitals now in hindsight that they've won a championship, and we look at it and say, boy, they really gave Alex Ovechkin every and Nick Backstrom and Holtby and John Carlson every opportunity to try to get that cup of constantly just responsibly or maybe irresponsibly burning through assets. But when you've got one of those supernova style players, you've got to give them that chance. And that's what I mean when we've confirmed it with Elias Pettersson, that he's a certain standard of player. You can't be disingenuous about your motives now. You've got to continually to push forward to try to get those victories. And also, again, just to compare and contrast it to Buffalo, do you really want to be the type of organization that doesn't prioritize winning? And what message does that send to future people that you want to bring into the organization? Not even just at a player level, but at an organizational level, from a scouting level, right? You want to start building it out so you have that culture of high standards. Because there's a difference between expecting a lot and, you know, demanding a lot and then being elite about it and thumbing your nose at it all, right? You're allowed to have high standards without being an elitist about it. And that's what I think good organizations attempt to do.
Yeah. And I mean, you could argue that the Canucks have two of those supernova type players right now with Quinn Hughes coming in and the impact he's been able to have. And, you know, we hear so many people talk about, you know, trying to take advantage of these guys being on their entry-level contracts. Well, that moment is right now. And that's what the Canucks have done to a certain extent. That's why Jim Benning acquired a guy like Tyler Toffoli. That's why they went out and signed a defenseman like Tyler Myers in free agency last year. They are in that mindset where, you know, again, we do not see them as one of those top level Stanley Cup contenders, but they can contend to be a playoff team. They're going to have a chance. If they win three of their next five games, they are going to be a playoff team. And that seems to be the mindset the organization wants to go in. And it, to me, it's the mindset that organizations have to go in if they want to have success. So I cannot get myself into the mindset. Again, I can understand the people that are saying, you know, I would prefer a top three pick to a first round exit. But in terms of the way you want to build your organization out and the mindset you want to instill in your players and your staff and your the people that you have within the organization can't afford to look at it that way. Now, if the Canucks legitimately lose to the Minnesota Wild and the silver lining is they have a good chance at a top three pick, that's something that's unprecedented because of this season. And, you know, it's a situation where they're going to keep that pick if they lose that playoff series. So that's a conversation we can have after they've lost. And it is a nice silver lining to have that you wouldn't. But the fact of the matter remains that you want to win that playoff series.
One interesting wrinkle, numbers just posed on Twitter, at numbers D12. Considering how unpredictable these playoffs might be, this could be a top five chance to win the cup with the current core. Do not take that for granted. We'll get to more of your reaction as well on the other side. And also, Derek Rosette is going to be joining us in just a couple of minutes. Your chance to get a couple of questions into Derek for our mailbag. Text us at 650-650. Also tweet us at Batch Hockey, at Bic650 on Twitter. It is Social Distance Central. Bic Nizar, Brendan Batchelor on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Black leather glove, no sequins. Buckles on the jacket, it's elite.
It's Social Distance Central on Sportsnet 650, the home of the Canucks. Vic Nizar and Brendan Batchelor, a former Canuck, going to join us in a couple of minutes. Derek Dorsett, 4 years here, and fairly memorable because he's kind of etched his part of history here, especially with his relation with the Sedin twins. So he's part of Canucks lore now, having spent 184 games on the ice before, of course, his career ending due to injury. Got a bunch of reaction here, Batcha, especially online at Twitter. I do like this one from JBrown89 on Twitter. I don't think I'd ever cheer against the Canucks, but it'd make me feel a bit better if the Canucks lost and then had a 37% chance at a lottery pick. I just wouldn't be as angry. That's to our poll question, where we're asking, what would make you cheer against the Canucks in their series with Minnesota? A 12.5% lottery pick chance, a 25% lottery pick chance, a 37.5% lottery pick chance, or nothing. Nothing would make you cheer against the Canucks. You can chime in at Bic650 on Twitter.
And to clarify, we're talking about a top three pick.
Correct.
Not just a chance in the lottery as it normally would be. And we got another good text here, and it is an unsigned text, so sign your text, people. But one of our listeners texted again saying, how many playoff losses did Crosby and Taves have before they won the Stanley Cup? And this plays into the conversation we were having before the break about playoff experience, and even if you think your team is going to lose, how the core group of players can benefit from that experience of losing. But, you know, looking at Crosby and Taves in particular, as the texter alludes to, it also shows how quickly your window can open when you have top-level young players. Sidney Crosby missed the playoffs in his first year in the NHL, lost in the first round in his second year in the NHL, lost in the cup final his third year, and then won the cup in his fourth year. So, you know, in the first 3 to 4 seasons of Sidney Crosby in the NHL, his team went from not being in the playoffs to winning the Stanley Cup. Jonathan Taves did it even quicker. Missed the playoffs his first year, lost in the conference final his second year, and won the Stanley Cup in his third year. So you look at a player like Elias Pettersson, let's say. If we want to, you know, pose that Pettersson's arc could mirror that of Crosby's, and certainly there are a lot of other factors that play into that as well. Crosby missed the playoffs in his first year. Pettersson missed the playoffs in his first year. Crosby lost in the first round in his second year. There's a very good chance the Canucks end up in a scenario where they lose in the first round this year. But then you look at how steep the climb was after that, where the following year, the Penguins went to the Stanley Cup final and lost, and then the year after that, they won. And it shows you that young players, and we're even talking, you know, 13, 14 years ago here, how big of an impact guys like Crosby and Taves were able to have on their team almost immediately. That is even more so the case with young players coming into the NHL right now. So just because today the Canucks don't look like a legit Stanley Cup contender doesn't mean that a season from now or two seasons from now, they don't vault into that stratosphere because of the high-end talent that they have now with their core and guys like Pettersson and Hughes.
Well, let's pose that to our guest. It is Derek Dorsett joining us on the line, who 10-year NHL career starting with the Columbus Blue Jackets, a franchise that, you know, Derek struggled to get into the playoffs, and then your first foray into it was your appearance in New York. Just how eye-opening was that experience when you get to the Rangers and you guys go on this great run to the finals?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, anytime you make the playoffs, it's exciting. And actually, my first year with the Blue Jackets, we did make the playoffs. But we clinched, I think it was three or four games, or maybe even five games before the end of the regular season in Chicago. And we didn't win another game that year. So,
right, yeah,
as we got swept by Detroit, and then, but, you know, anytime you're in the playoffs, you feel you have a chance to win, and you do have a chance to win the Stanley Cup, and that's ultimately the reasons why we play, is to win. So it's a lot of fun. It's the funnest time of year, and you know, obviously excited to hopefully get the hockey going here and see how this new format rolls out.
What were you able to learn from that New York experience that you were able to bring into the Vancouver season? And obviously that season ends up going to the playoffs as well.
Obviously you got to control your ups and downs in the playoffs. You know, momentum shifts, not, you know, once or twice in a series, it shifts once or twice in a single period. So you got to be able to not get too high, not get too low, and just know that it's a grind, and it's gonna be a long couple months when you're in the playoffs. And you know, I think I heard you guys talking there just before we got on the line about, you know, young guys and the impact they can have on the, you know, a team and get them to win the Stanley Cup. And you know, the one thing that I'll say is, you know, Taves and Crosby, you know, they did it quickly, and you know, but they also did have good supporting cast around them. It doesn't take just one guy to get you the playoffs and the Stanley Cup. It's a team sport, and you know, obviously those guys had huge impacts on their teams and drove their teams in the right direction. But you know, they had the likes of Fleury and Dupree, you know, Patrick Kane. Guys like that, you know, were great supporting casts in getting them to win.
Derek Dorsett, former Vancouver Canuck, with us here on Social Distance Central on Sportsnet 650. And, you know, you talk about those great supporting casts, and that's absolutely true, and those guys being able to rise to success so early in their careers. When you look at the Vancouver Canucks right now with some of the young players that they have added, whether it's Elias Pettersson and now Quinn Hughes, where do you think they are in terms of that development, and how much could those guys gain from the experience they're going to get here to play this five-game play-in series against Minnesota? It's not the traditional, you know, seven-game first round going into the playoffs after a grind of an 82-game season kind of playoffs because of everything that's happened in the world this year. But that said, do you think those young players still stand to gain a lot from that experience, whether they win or lose?
Oh, for sure. I think you know the Stanley Cup's still on the line. Everyone's going to be hungry to win that Stanley Cup, and that's why, you know, it's exciting, you know, to see that they're going to be able to play this season out, because it's going to give these guys experience. And you know, they have a great chance to win the Stanley Cup. Obviously, you know, the top eight seeds have a little bit better chance because they don't have to do a play-in. But, you know, I think, you know, you talk about supporting casts of teams and you look at the way that the Canucks are built now. You got Elias Pettersson and then you got Quinn Hughes and you got Brock Besser, you got Bo Horvat, you got unbelievable goaltending in Jacob Markstrom and Demko. I mean, the team is building in the right directions. Then you got great veteran presence in Tanev and Sutter and Edler. I mean, they're a team that could do some damage here. And you know what? If they fall up short, it's going to be a great experience moving forward. And anytime you lose, it makes you hungrier the next year. And that's a great thing about sports is you always get another crack at it. Unless you're obviously getting towards the end of your career and you don't play the following year. But that's why, you know, it's got to be exciting times and comforting knowing that they're going to, you know, play this season out and let some of those younger guys capitalize on this opportunity to, you know, get that experience.
How challenging do you think it will be for these guys to ramp back up? In many cases, you know, we talked to Thatcher Demko a while ago, and he talked about the fact that he hadn't been off the ice for this long of a stretch since he was 8 or 9 years old. And, you know, now that things are loosening up in many areas, rinks are opening again, guys are able to get back on the ice. But what do you think some of the challenges these players will face in getting themselves back to a level where they can contend in Stanley Cup playoff games? What will those challenges be?
Well, the great thing is everyone's in the same boat, right? You know, it's not that, you know, 5 or 6 teams have been full go and you got the other 10, 15, 20 teams or whatever it is, you know, just starting up. So every player's in the same boat. And obviously the teams that are going to, you know, come out of the gates the best are the guys that, you know, have held themselves accountable and the training and staying conditioned. And, you know, obviously sometimes it might be a little bit easier for younger teams to get going, but, you know, everyone's going to be in the same boat. Everyone's had the same amount of time off and, you know, and some teams that maybe were banged up more than other teams, their guys are going to be healthy and ready to go. So, you know, I just think everyone's in the same boat and on the same playing field. So I don't think that should be an issue. Obviously, I think it'll be a little bit sloppy and timing will be off at the start. But, you know, that'll all come back pretty quickly once the competition ramps up.
Sportsnet 650, joined with Derek Dorsett, former Vancouver Canuck, 10-year NHL player. We'll get to some of the fans' questions, Derek, but this one comes in. I've got no question for Dorse, but damn, I miss him. So the fan from Canucks, or the love from Canucks fans is still there. You still got some time to get your questions in. 650. I did want to pose this to you, Derek. Just the idea of leadership in a locker room. Obviously, there's a lot going on in the world right now, and a lot of people are stepping up and saying things. And not necessarily in that regard, just, you know, when you get into a locker room, how quickly can you tell who is a leader and who isn't, and who's going to grow into that role?
You can tell pretty quickly. Obviously, you can tell on when you get to, you know, great teams, you can tell that, you know, who the leaders are and who's directing where things go. And, you know, the best teams I've always find are teams that, you know, have a number of leaders and not just the guys that wear the letters on their jersey. There's, you know, so the teams that, you know, are always together and truly care and, you know, take everyone's opinion and look after each other on and off the ice. Those are the teams that, you know, have the best success. And, you know, there's great leadership in Vancouver and there was great leadership in all the teams I played. And every team runs it a little bit differently and every leader is different too. So, but yeah, it's pretty easy to figure out, you know, going into a locker room, who's who's in charge.
And in terms of your own leadership, you know, you talk to guys here in Vancouver that you played with, and they obviously have nothing but nice things to say about you. And you think throughout your career, you developed into a leader as well. How did that process go for you? Did you think of yourself as a leader, even dating back to your days with Medicine Hat in junior hockey? And how did that build as you broke into the NHL and obviously changed teams a couple of times? But did you feel like you grew into that role as a leader at the NHL level as your career went on?
Yeah, for sure. I think the one thing for me, the way that I always tried to lead, and one thing that I always kind of always would say to myself is, don't ask someone to do something that you're not willing to do. And, you know, just work hard. You know, sometimes I think, you know, yeah, when in my younger days in Medicine Hat, and, you know, sometimes maybe I would cross the line, but, you know, I'd always be there for a teammate. I'd always, you know, stick up for a teammate. And like I said, I'd always try to do the right thing and work hard, and you know, not try and waver off of you know, my morals and, you know, what got me to the point that I was at. And you know, obviously I truly went off of that. You know, don't ask someone to do something that you're not willing to do, and just kind of buried my head and worked hard, and you know, hopefully you know, over my career that I influenced some people to be good leaders. And, you know, leadership is a huge role, not just in hockey, but in life in general, as you know, we're in crazy times now.
Derek, we were just kind of reminiscing last week, because it was actually the 13-year anniversary when the Vancouver Giants won the Memorial Cup. Obviously, Medicine Hat involved in there. That, and we were talking about that Game 7 in the WHL Championship. What do you remember from that game between Medicine Hat and Vancouver?
Well, I actually, in this pandemic, I think the WHL or one of the networks actually played, and I actually watched it for the first time during this, and I didn't realize how bad I played in that game seven, but maybe I'm just critiquing myself a little harder. But you know, it was a hard-fought battle. Two great teams, and two teams that probably both deserve to win. You know, probably both trophies. You know, going into that series, the crazy thing is, you know, people thought it was just going to be a write-off, and it was just going to be a quick series, and, you know, both teams were penciled in already for the tournament. And but it went to double OT, and it was a hard-fought battle. There's, you know, it's surprising that we both made it to the finals in the tournament, just because how hard we beat each other up in that seven-game series. So. But it's great memories, and both teams had great leadership.
What do you remember about the atmosphere? And of course, you had a number of great years in Medicine Hat and know all about that old arena there and the fan base there. But particularly in that game, Game 7, it goes to double overtime. There's the fog on the ice that you guys have to skate around and try and disperse it so the games can continue. That probably, you know, it has to be a night you'll never forget, and an atmosphere that probably compares in some ways to games you went on to play in the NHL.
Yeah, obviously, you know, the rinks are a little bit different, but, you know, obviously it was a lot of fun. You know, a lot of great, you know, announcers that have announced a lot of games and series in the WHL. I've heard them say it's the best series ever played in the WHL finals. And, you know, I remember when the fog was coming in, we'd go out and do some laps. And I think by the third or fourth time, some of us veteran guys that, you know, logged a lot of minutes just ended up sitting on the bench and was like, I don't even have the energy to go out to help lift this fog. So, but it was definitely, it was a lot of fun. It was, you know, I'm glad throughout this whole pandemic that they replayed it, and I got to sit at home and watch it with my kids until they went to bed and fell asleep. So it was a great time of you know, my life, and it's something that I, you know, hold close to me. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, let's get some fan questions. This one's from Alex. Would you say you were a pest or an enforcer?
I'd say I was a pest. I don't think I don't think I was a straight enforcer. I think, I believe I played the game. I believed I was good enough to play. And, you know, a lot of times when you say enforcer, that it's, you know, your only role was to go out and fight. And I don't remember over my career having a coach tap me on the back and say, hey, go out and fight that guy. Sometimes I knew the coach wanted me to do it, but I've never had anyone ever tell me to, you know, go fight that person. And that's one thing that so I'd say pass for sure.
Question here from Jaskaran on Twitter asking, what's a normal day like now for Derek Dorsett? What do you get up to these days? I would assume outside of the pandemic, which certainly has slowed things down for a lot of people.
Yeah, so I got my three young kids, 5, 4, and will be 2 in August. So spending time with them, and I've been fortunate enough. We're living in Columbus, Ohio right now. I've been waiting on a green card process. So I've been kind of landlocked here for the last 10 months or so. Not that it matters because the borders aren't open anyways, but I've been following a real estate developer around, kind of learning the real estate game, and kind of waiting for my green card to come, and evaluating options and the real estate game, and also looking to get back in hockey in some shape or form.
This one's from Ian, and I think this is very cleverly worded. The best individual talent you have played with. So I don't think you can pick both Daniel and Henrik. You may have to choose one of them or someone else entirely.
Oh, wow. Put me on the spot like that. I'd have to think on that one. One of the best talented skill wise, you know, I didn't play a full season, or I was in training camp with them, but skill wise, I mean, Nikolaj Zverev was crazily skilled, talent wise, Rick Nash is up there, the Sedins. That's a really hard question, to kind of pick one, but I'd have to go with the Sedins, Zverev, or Rick Nash.
And one more here, Bernd writing it on Twitter asking, where do you have that game puck from Henrik and Daniel's last game? I know that was a super meaningful moment for you when they gave you that puck. So I'm assuming you still have it and probably have it somewhere that you can keep it, and whether it's in your home or whatever. Where's that game puck now?
Yeah, you know, I got that actually sitting on my desk, my office at home. It just shows what kind of type of people they are and how much they care and what kind of leaders they are. You know, they knew, that whole week was about them, and, you know, the last thing they were thinking was about them. And they, for them to, with everything going on around them and the questions and the excitement, and for them to even think about grabbing the puck and, their last game ever, and, you know, giving it to me after the game. As you can see, I was surprised, and the emotion came. A lot of people don't know this, but they did the same thing 2 nights later. At a team dinner at the year-end party, they gave me a game-worn jersey from their last game, too.
We'll get you out on this one. There's a follow-up to the pest question. Was there a player that you enjoyed riling up the most?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I wouldn't say there was one. There's one that I kind of chuckle about, and it's, I fought Ryan Reeves. I think it was his rookie season. I would say it was probably a draw of a fight. And, you know, at the time he was probably, or now he's probably the toughest guy in the league. And, you know, I knew after I fought him that, you know, I escaped that one safely and I should probably not fight him again, because the following year, I think he, you know, one punched two guys in a row and broke one guy's orbital bone in three straight fights. So I was like, I probably shouldn't fight him anymore. He's a little bit out of my weight category. So every time we played him, he always wanted to fight me again. And I'd always tell him I didn't need to, because I already beat him up. But obviously I didn't beat him up. You know, he's a tough guy. He's a competitor. And, I loved seeing that he's created a great role for himself in the league. And, he's became more of a player than just an enforcer. And I always like to see the success. But I get him riled up because I wouldn't fight him. That was for my own safety.
Well, Jack, we really appreciate the time, and stay safe with everything going on, and hopefully we can connect in the future.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks,
10-year NHL player and former Canuck, Derek Dorsett, joining us. Eddie Lack on the way as he'll join Reach Deep, Dan Reacher, Randeep Janda here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.